have questions? Hopefully I have some answers on this episode of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson.
All the way to the cup, man. We've seen the slingshot before, and it works again. 67-66, so bails him out at the end of the shot clock. 13 and 6 dimes for Tyreek Evans. 17 minutes.
I asked you for questions, and you had some, and a lot of them were about that guy, Tyreek Evans. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate, and this is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And before we get into listener questions, which is what I decided to do for today as things slow down a little bit on the free agency front, we should get to the news of the day. And the news of today, Monday, is actually the news of the weekend, which is that Alvin Gentry went on Zach Lowe's podcast and said that Tyreek Evans will not be ready for the start of the season. That's not a huge surprise. If you listen to the podcast I did about Tyreek last week, and also the one I did with Scott Kushner, talking about kind of the roster and looking ahead a little bit. In both of those cases, we talked about the possibility that Tyreek Evans would not be ready for the start of the season, and I expected that probably was going to be the case, but I didn't want to say anything definitively until I heard it on the record from, you know, somebody closely associated with the Pelicans. We've now heard that information, Alvin Gentry saying that he's not going to be ready. And the way Alvin Gentry presented it on the Low Post is that, you know, there's a real possibility that he's not going to play for some time. And I think the way he put it was, you know, if he comes back, it's just icing on the cake. And that's not when he comes back. That's not in December or January. That's if he comes back. And so I think there is a concern that Tyreek Evans just won't be ready this season. And I don't know how legitimate a concern that is, but when the coach uses the word if instead of when, I think that's an open door to consider the possibility that he's just not going to play. So there are a lot of questions about where Tyreek stands, and you had a lot of questions about him. So we're going to get into a little bit of listener questions. We're going to do this periodically where I'll just ask on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter at @BDawsonWrites, for questions about whatever. And going forward, these can be about anything you want. They can be about the team. They can be about my job. They can be about the NBA. Anything you want to talk about, we can talk about. I won't get to everybody because there were quite a few of them, and some of them were a little bit repetitive, and some of them were things we just probably aren't going to talk about. But, you know, you're allowed to ask anything. I just don't have to answer anything. So we'll get into some of those Tyreek questions. We'll get into some questions about the rotation, and hopefully I'll get to the vast majority of your questions, and hopefully this will be okay, and we'll want to do it again in the future. So we'll get into that. But first, just a couple of reminders. One, want to remind you, as I do almost every episode, to check out theadvocate.com. That's the place to get all of our coverage of the Pelicans, both from me and from Scott Kushner, from our award-winning columnist, Rod Walker. Over the weekend, did a little bit of analysis on Buddy Hield and Sheck Diallo's summer league play, and got into the fact that you don't want to overanalyze summer league play, but a little bit about how they played and what they'll need to work on between now and the start of fall camp. There will be a bunch more Pelicans coverage in the offseason, and of course, as we get closer to camp, a lot of stuff from both me and from Scott. So definitely check that out at theadvocate.com. It's also a great place to get coverage about LSU football and the Saints as we get closer to those seasons. So check all that stuff out. I also want to remind you to review the podcast and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, particularly if you use iTunes to listen. Give us a 5-star review if you think that it merits that, and leave a review if you wanted to do that. That really helps us out. It kind of helps us move up some lists, and it would be very helpful to me if you could do that. So just pop by, give us 5 stars if you get a chance. And in exchange for that, I'll answer some of your questions. Because you had a whole bunch of them on Twitter. And actually, I was surprised because I posted it kind of late on Sunday. And I'll probably in the future do that at a little bit better hour. But the fact is, I didn't get to, I wanted to have a guest today. And that guest kind of fell through and until later in the week. And so this is kind of a last minute thing to throw this together and do a listener questions. But we'll do it with a little bit more planning going forward. There will be some guests later this week on the podcast, but I could see us doing this at least once a week when we're doing a daily show. And in August, when we shift to weekly shows, or maybe twice weekly, depending on kind of the news of the day, we'll probably do one of those periodically as well. So I like the idea of doing listener questions. Hopefully this is going to turn out well. So let's dive in. So the first question is from GWG, who goes by @StPelican225. And he wants to know who I think starts and who finishes games. So I thought it would be fitting to start this segment with a question about starters. So I would say right now, Drew Holiday is a lock at point guard. I know he came off the bench some last year. People were a little perplexed. I don't think that's going to happen this year. So you'll have Drew Holiday at point guard. I think it's shooting guard early on. I believe Buddy Hield is going to start. That's my guess right now. I know he's coming off a summer league in which he didn't shoot the ball very well. I know he showed some areas where he really needs to improve, and also showed a little bit of a knack for scoring some and making some plays. He was a better passer than we thought. He rebounded the ball a little better than we thought. And so, you know, I think he's going to be in there at the start. That's definitely open for debate. I think it's the most open position of these five. I believe Omer Asik will start at center at the beginning of games. There might be some times where that's not the case, but if he's healthy, I do believe he's going to be in that spot to start. I think they're going to try to involve him a little bit. You heard Alvin Gentry, if you listen to that Low Post podcast, talk about once again about the idea that he can fit in a running system because he did it in Houston. And I'm not sure I agree that he's a total fit there. That was a long time ago. He's less healthy than he was then. It's a long time in NBA terms, not a long time in the real world, but you know, he's a different player than he was then. We'll see if it works, but I think early on, you know, if I had to make a guess, I think he's going to be starting at center. Anthony Davis, obviously, at power forward is a lock. And then I think that small forward spot is probably going to go to Solomon Hill. You know, there are some options there. If Quincy Pondexter's healthy at the beginning of the year, and we'll see about that, then he certainly would have a chance to start there. But I think for purposes of defensive versatility and kind of, you know, ball movement, those sorts of things, I think Solomon Hill is going to start there. To me, that's another one that's fairly up for debate along with shooting guard. I think those two could swing a couple different ways. I would guess that Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, and Omer Asik are really good bets. And my guess is here, Buddy Hield and Solomon Hill. As for who finishes the game, still Drew Holiday and obviously Anthony Davis, but I think the positions are going to be shifted a little bit. So Drew Holiday is still in there at point guard. The shooting guard, I think, is going to be sort of to be determined. Until we get a sense of Buddy Hield, I don't know if we can say that he's going to be in that finishing five yet. You know, we have to see where he is defensively. We have to see how his shooting is going. There may be some games that he finishes and some games that he doesn't, but I think Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway both have a pretty good shot of being in that spot in place of him in the finishing five, at least at the start of the season. Then I think you have Anthony Davis at center in those lineups. And then my guess is that you would have Quincy Pondexter and Solomon Hill on the floor at the two forward spots. Solomon Hill playing more power forward in that scenario, and Quincy Pondexter kind of being the small forward. If Quincy Pondexter's not healthy at the start, I could see Dante Cunningham there, and I could see Cunningham anyway. I could see Cunningham and Hill, or Cunningham and Pondexter, either of those two guys. But I think if you have Cunningham and Hill, that's not ideal because it's still a good defensive lineup, but I think you have a little bit less reliable shot making. I think Pondexter and Hill, between those two guys, you've got, though Cunningham shot the ball much better last season and showed an ability to make three-point shots, I think you'd be more dependable. There'd be more dependable shooting if you had Pondexter on the floor. And I think Hill is sort of the equal of Cunningham in terms of his defensive versatility. At least that's what I believe right now, until we see him play you know, it's hard to say. But right now, if I had to guess, I'd say Drew Holiday, one of those shooting guards, and let's say Etuan Moore right now. I don't know that that'll necessarily be the case, but just as an example, let's say Etuan Moore is out there. Then Anthony Davis at center, Solomon Hill at power forward, and Quincy Pondexter at small forward would be my early guess on kind of a finishing five right now. There are going to be some exceptions to that lineup. If you're playing against DeMarcus Cousins and the Kings, you know, maybe you don't want Anthony Davis banging around inside. But I think you're going to see a lot of that small ball lineup. And I think in some cases you'll probably see Terrence Jones in there with Solomon Hill as the small forward and Terrence Jones as the power forward. I don't know if you'll see that at the end of games because we just don't know what Jones is at this point coming off the year he's coming off of, but also having seen the really good years he's had, I think we don't have a real sense yet of whether he can be in that mix. So there's so many unknowns with this team that these are wild guesses, but that's what they're supposed to be. It's July 18th. What would worry me about that finishing five is rebounding, and that would worry me pretty much across the board with this team. I mean, I think anytime they're going small, there's going to be some concern about that, and I think they're going to play small quite a bit. If you listen to the things that Alvin Gentry said this offseason, you know, sideline interviews during those games, in Las Vegas in the summer league. He talked some about Anthony Davis getting stronger, about him playing more at the five. I think privately, AD prefers to be a power forward. I mean, I think that's his natural position. But the way the NBA is going, he is really a small ball five anymore. You know, there are going to be exceptions. Again, they're not going to put him out there against DeMarcus Cousins and make him bang around a whole lot. But when they can, when it creates a huge offensive advantage for them, I think you'll see him there, and I think you'll see a lot of Solomon Hill at power forward, because that's sort of what he did some in the playoffs and looked pretty good doing it for Indiana against Toronto. I just think that's sort of the look they're going to ultimately be going with. I think in large chunks of the game and definitely at the end of games, barring something unforeseen. It's Sun, not Sun. Sun, not Sun. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Who goes by @Sunny_Inkstar. And he wanted to ask my opinion of Diallo at the three, Shaq Diallo at the three, with Terrence Jones and Anthony Davis in the same front court. And I think that's very unlikely at this point. Shaq Diallo needs to be able to guard threes. And eventually, at 6'9", I think he needs to be able to play that position some. Even as long as he is, I think he's better suited to play some three. But I think that's down the road. He can be a small ball four. He can be a power forward ultimately if he gets a little bit of extra weight. But right now, I just don't think he has the offensive capability to play small forward. You know, if you had a front court of Davis, Jones, and Diallo, that definitely would alleviate some of those rebounding concerns. And maybe you could see that on occasion, but I kind of doubt it. Because this is a system that's built on spacing the floor, an offense that's really predicated on doing that. And you just wouldn't have very much floor spacing with those three guys. Anthony Davis would be your best three-point shooter. And I think you'd like to avoid a scenario where Davis is the best three-point shooter you have in your front court at any given moment. Ideally, I think you'd want, you know, Quincy Pondexter, or you'd want Solomon Hill to develop into a better shooter. You want some shooting out of those spots. And while Terrence Jones can make a three-pointer, and really he's not a dramatically worse shooter by any stretch than Solomon Hill is, so you could put him on the floor and count on him to stretch it a little bit. Defenses do have to respect at least the ability that he's going to take it, and he's going to shoot about 30% of them. It's not a great percentage, but he can make them. But Diallo, he just doesn't have that range yet. And I don't think he puts the ball on the floor well enough yet. He's just really suited right now to be kind of a hustle guy who plays at the four. You know, you could even see him at the five in some real weird combinations, but I think the three for him as a rookie is a real stretch. 42, who goes by @42PhD and who is getting quite a bit of play on this podcast lately, asks, which free agent signing will you, at season's end, say had the biggest positive influence on the team? And he says lots of ways this can go, which I agree with. I'm very tempted to say Langston Galloway, which I know is a little bit weird because I didn't put him in either my starting or my finishing five. But I think he's a guy whose work ethic and whose locker room presence are going to be really good for this team. And I think there's something to be said for a guy who's kind of a local. He's from Baton Rouge, and he really wants to be here. You know, he has an opt-out. He has a motivation to have a really good year. But I also think, you know, he had some other options and he wanted to be in New Orleans. Terrence Jones is the same way. But I think Galloway has a little bit more of a locker room presence, a little bit more of a, you know, an opportunity to be to have a leadership role. And I think all of those things are really good for this team. But I think the easy, smart answer, and probably the right answer, is Solomon Hill, because of some of the things I just talked about. I mean, to me, the fact that he can play some small ball power forward, that he can play some small forward, maybe even start there. The fact that he can, depending on the other team's personnel, he can maybe guard three positions because he can guard some shooting guards. He played at shooting guard quite a bit at Indiana. That just all that unlocks some things in terms of how you want to play with this group, I think. I think it's important that he be at least somewhat of a reliable shooter. He's got to be at least as good a three-point shooter as he was during the season last year when he shot like 44% on corner threes. He needs to be able to do that. I think he needs to grasp the offense and help facilitate ball movement in the offense. Doesn't need to look to score a ton, but I think, you know, defensively he comes ready to play, ready to make an impact, and I feel like for this team that's particularly important. So there aren't an infinite number of answers. There's like four possible answers, but to me, Solomon Hill is the guy who makes the most sense and who I would say right now, and I could be totally wrong. Brad Laborde, who creatively goes by @BradLaborde, Wants to know, from an outsider's perspective, is ham and cheese on French a po' boy? And if not, what ingredients constitute a po' boy? And this is a great question. And I will say that I am the furthest thing from an expert because I just moved here like barely, not even a year ago. When I came here, I thought of po' boys basically as fried seafood or roast beef. That was a po' boy to me. But New Orleans has, it's kind of opened up my eyes. There are more options here. You know, you see the basics almost everywhere, but there are an almost infinite number of things you could do with a po' boy. So I think it's fine to call ham and cheese a po' boy because that is on the menu at Shortstop, and I would defer to Shortstop on matters of po' boy particulars. So that's my answer to that one, Brad. Paul Schroeder, who goes by at refill0309, that's Phil with a PH, says, what are the chances that Sheck can crack the rotation? I probably should have combined this one a little bit with the earlier Sheck Diallo question. I don't think there's a great chance that he's going to play a lot, but I do think they're going to find Sheck Diallo some minutes. You know, in a lot of ways, he's like a first-round pick. They had him with a first-round grade. A lot of teams did, and I think they were surprised that he was there at 33. So he has like kind of a first-round pick. You can take almost a first-round pick approach to him, but at the same time, he's a developmental guy. He's like one of those late first-round picks who needs some time. And so he needs some work. He's got a lot of things he's got to do better to be ready to play at the NBA level. He's got to be stronger. He's got to be a little bit more advanced offensively before you see him play a lot of minutes. But he showed some things in Vegas, and I think what he showed more than anything is that he needs minutes. He needs to play. And so, you know, I think they're going to try to find some ways to get him on the floor. And maybe he'll surprise, and maybe he'll play a little bit more than I think. But I don't think it's going to be significant rotation minutes, but I think they're going to have to try to find some ways because he really does need game time. He needs some game action and game minutes to get better. So I don't think he's going to be a regular rotation guy, but we'll see. He might surprise me. I do think you'll see him play some. Fernando Ritzman at Nando8701 asks, how do you think the rotation works? Who gets the most minutes of the three new guards, Moore, Frazier, and Galloway? And Frazier's technically not a new guard, but I get what he means. They re-signed him or committed to re-signing him. Signings aren't official yet. I expect that to happen very soon, so I won't have to keep talking around this in the same way. So when I say signing, understand that I know that they haven't quite yet signed. All those guys are, especially Moore and Galloway, who I just have not seen a whole lot of, they're kind of a relative mystery to me, so I think it's hard to break this down real analytically. I think you're going to see a lot of Moore and Galloway playing off the ball, especially as you have Buddy Hield go through whatever growing pains he's going to go through. So I think you're going to see some minutes where one of those guys is on the floor with Drew Holiday or Tim Frazier, and they're playing the two. And both guys are kind of combo guys. Moore is a natural. He's really a two guard. Galloway, the Knicks, I think, listed him as a point guard, considered him a point guard, but they're both kind of combo guards. The other thing, you know, could we see Tim Frazier take kind of a leap forward? I think that's an unknown. He was really good when he got a chance to play down the stretch last year, but how much of that is just, you know, that somebody has to put up numbers on a team that's so depleted? How's it going to translate when he's playing with a more complete, more experienced roster? I think he's got a chance to be pretty good, but those are questions. I mean, they're just things we don't know the answers to until we see a little bit more. If you look statistically, Galloway was pretty good at creating plays when he was at point guard for the Knicks last season. And I do think he's got a little bit more point guard skill than Etuan Moore, who can play both positions. But I just think if you're saying which one is more ideal at point guard, I think it's Galloway, even though neither one is really a true point guard. So I think Galloway might be a little bit better at point, and so I think you might see him get a few more minutes based on the fact that he can really play both positions. You could see a lot of situations where he's running the offense. You could see some positions where he's playing off the ball alongside Drew Holiday or maybe Tim Frazier. So I think, you know, until we get a real sense of Buddy Hield, it is hard to break down the backcourt rotation. But if I had to guess right now, I'd say Galloway of those three guys gets the most minutes. And I've kind of talked about who I thought would start and finish games. Josh Farr, who's at JW Farr with two R's, 96, says, what role do you see Oshik having this year? AD can't play the five nonstop, especially with his injury history. I agree. And as I said earlier, I think Oshik is going to start more often than not, especially early. It's going to be interesting to just see how healthy he is. But I think if he comes back without pain and if he's in good basketball shape, and he's been playing this season, which I think is good that he played for the Turkish national team, you know, if he's in good shape, I think he's still a credible guy to guard bigger centers in the post and to rebound, which he has always done pretty effectively, and then free up Anthony Davis to play power forward against some bigger lineups. So kind of talked about that a little bit. But I do think he has a part to play on this team. I think it's going to be important. I mentioned that there were a couple of people with Tyreek Evans questions. One of them was Joseph. I want to say it's Ayat. I hope I'm not saying that wrong. He's at Joseph_Ayat, who said, if Tyreek is traded, what kind of return would you like to see? A straight-up player swap or picks? And again, a couple of people had very similar questions. I think first you have to consider the possibility that you're not going to be able to trade Tyreek Evans this year. That because he's not going to start the season healthy, because we don't know when he'll be healthy exactly, and we don't know what kind of player he'll be once he's back, if he comes back. I think you just have to consider the possibility that it's not going to happen. And then second, I think you have to think about the fact that it's a little more than $10 million that comes off the books in cap space at the end of this season if you have Tyreek and you just ride it out with him. So to me, unless you get something in return that really, really helps you this year, and the things I think would help this year, I think a scoring wing would help. I think a kind of a big, kind of rugged power forward type might help some. I think you just have to consider if you can't get one of those guys, and I don't think you can get great value for Tyreek Evans, I don't think you want to rush into a trade unless you get something that really, really is going to help you be a good team, not only this year, but in the next few years. What I would not do for a player who's in the last year of his contract, unless you just found that perfect fit, which I think is unlikely in a trade for Tyreek, I wouldn't attach a future first. And I wouldn't take on a really bad contract. I think one of the great things about the Pelicans, as dire a situation as they were coming out of with all the injuries and coming off 30 wins, moving forward, they have a lot of flexibility. They're going to have more cap room next year. They have all their future first-round picks. I would not take on, say, a Greg Monroe's contract in order to get something, just to move Tyreek and get a big-bodied player who would definitely take some pressure off Anthony Davis, but who maybe doesn't fit what you're building necessarily. So I wouldn't do a thing like that. The problem is you got to make salaries work out, so you can't just trade Tyreek off for, it's going to be hard to trade him off for just picks or something like that. And I don't know, again, what people would be willing to give up. So I just think you got to be very judicious in what you choose to do with that trade. I think you got to be careful not to take on a bunch of bad salary just to make a move. And I think you need to be careful not to give away your future flexibility just to make a move for the sake of making a move this year. That's going to be hard if Tyreek is playing and healthy and could fetch you something at the trade deadline and you're in the playoff picture. That's going to be very tempting. I think that's a temptation that's worth resisting. To not take on a really bad deal and not give up future first-round picks and future flexibility if you can avoid it. That's my take. I can't say that that's their take. I just don't know. RJ Marsh, who's at RJ Marsh, says, how does the team replace the offense it lost with the departures of Rhino and Eric Gordon? And that's sort of the question of free agency, I think, in a lot of ways. I think you have to hope that Buddy Hield gives you some scoring. But I wouldn't bet on him getting you more than like 12 points a game or something. He's a rookie. He's going to struggle to adjust. We saw the speed of the game was an adjustment for him at Summer League, and he's still got another leap forward. I think he'll get better as the season goes on, but I don't think you can depend on too much offense from him. I don't think that's the safe way to go into a season is counting on a rookie to give you a ton of offense. I think more than that, what you have to hope for is that the offense brings out the best in guys like Hill and Galloway and Moore, who have showed signs offensively, but they haven't really been consistent. They haven't had the kind of opportunities they might get this year. We'll see. But you look, the Pelicans averaged 100 points a game last year in the 14 games after they shut down Anthony Davis. So that was without Davis, without Eric Gordon, without Tyreek Evans, obviously without Quincy Pondexter. It was without Ryan Anderson for a big chunk of that. So the system produces points. I mean, that's what it's done with Mike D'Antoni. The Knicks scored when they weren't very good. This team can score points. I think the hope is that this group is going to run this offense well, that Anthony Davis takes a step toward his form from the year before. He was a pretty good scorer even last year, so I don't think you count on a lot more points from him because he averaged over 24 a game. But maybe he's a little bit better all-around player, and I think significantly, you hope that he takes a step forward in terms of making the people around him better. That's something that Alvin Gentry talked about him needing to do even last year, work on recognizing double teams, making quick passes out of those. I think he's shown flashes that he can be a very good passer. He hasn't done that consistently, and I think he needs to take a step forward in terms of that. The three-point shooting is going to be really hard to replace. You have to hope that a few guys chip in a few extra three-pointers, and those new guys shoot the ball well enough to offset some of those losses, and that Buddy Hield makes some, and that Drew Holiday's, maybe his numbers are a little bit better because he went through a prolonged slump at one point last year. You have to hope that he's a little more consistent shooter. His minutes will be higher, you would think, without the restrictions. Galloway started off the year last year shooting the three ball really, really well. You have to hope that he's back in form. And you got to get a little bit of luck, because that's a lot of three-pointers you have to replace with those two guys. They were the two leading three-point shooters in terms of making shots on the team. And Norris Cole made some. You've got a lot of three-pointers to make up for, and that's going to be tough. But I think the offense can generate points because that's just kind of what it does. And then, you know, on top of that, I think you have to hope that you're better defensively, because last year, just not a very good defensive team at all. You have to hope that these additions make you a little bit better defensively, and so maybe there isn't as much pressure to score quite as many points, although I think they're going to get some offense just out of running the system. This is a difficult one to say. Duty, a.k.a. Junior, who's at Junior_TrapGangKev, says, what's the injury status on Terrence Jones to this point? Is he healthy or not? I didn't talk about Terrence Jones in that last answer because I kind of wanted to save it for this. I don't know exactly what his status is after a season where he had a lot of injuries, but he also just struggled to get on the floor and be consistent even when he was listed as healthy. And I don't know what his situation was. I don't know if he had nagging stuff that was, you know, bothering him and keeping him from playing. I don't know if he just didn't play because he didn't play very well when he was healthy. But I'm hoping that I'm going to get a chance to talk to him soon and get a little bit of clarity on that. And I'm definitely hoping to devote a podcast this week to talking about him with somebody who knows more about him than I do. So I'll be interested to see that. I do think in terms of their offense, too, I think Terrence Jones is a guy who has the opportunity to help you offset some of those losses from Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. He's not going to make up the three-point shooting. He'll take some threes. He'll make about 30% of them. But he is a guy who you know, 2 and 3 years ago scored. He was a scorer. He was a double-digit scorer. And I don't know what his opportunity is going to be like here. He is, to me, one of the great mysteries of this season. The fact that they're getting him on something close to a minimum contract and kind of figuring out what they have once they get him. You know, he could be a guy who, if he's in his old form, you know, if he is in that kind of position as a player and he's healthy and he plays well and he has the kind of energy that he sometimes played with and he does some of the things offensively, he could actually be an additional scorer for them. He could be a double-digit scorer. He could play some minutes and finish games and maybe even be, you know, a contender to start if you started small. So I think he's a real interesting guy in this offseason, and I probably will devote a lot of time talking to him upcoming because I just think that he's a real X factor, and I think it's going to be a very intriguing situation. You can't count on a lot from him, but I think the ceiling for him, what he could give you, is really intriguing. So I think he's somebody that we'll end up discussing a lot kind of as we go along. The last question from Thomas Nielsen, who is Tommy Diculous, at Tommy Diculous on Twitter, basically wants to know, how good is Buddy Hield without his jump shot? He says, isn't that the one and only skill he's great at? And it's kind of an odd question, Thomas, because yes, if Buddy Hield doesn't shoot the ball well, he's really reduced as a player because you're taking away his greatest strength. And if you did that to anybody, they would struggle to be a really, really effective player. That said, without shooting the ball well at Summer League, he did score almost 17 points a game. He put up better rebounding and assist numbers than I think I expected him to. I don't know what everybody else expected. But I wouldn't read too much into his shooting at Summer League. You know, I'm not saying he's Steph Curry, but Steph Curry shot about what he shot, almost the same percentage. Derrick Rose shot 29% at Summer League. It's just sometimes guys are great, sometimes, you know, they struggle, and none of it is a great indicator of what kind of player they're going to be. All-time great players typically look pretty good there, but some guys who aren't great sometimes look good too. Anthony Randolph scored a whole bunch of points in Summer League. So it's just hard to get a real great feel for anything off Summer League. So let's let Buddy get into some NBA games. Let's let him play with and against some real NBA competition and see how he shoots and see how he progresses over the course of the year before we panic about what he might do if he doesn't make jump shots, because I think it's just that's a little bit premature and we don't need to waste a lot of time on it. I don't feel like we've wasted time on this podcast, but we have spent a lot of time together here. It's going a little longer than I thought, and that's pretty much all the questions that I wanted to get to. I enjoyed doing listener questions. I think I'd like to keep doing this. Hopefully it's something that you guys have interest in and you'll continue asking those questions. We have a full week of podcasts. Hopefully have one every day this week. Again, hoping to talk to Terrence Jones for the newspaper. We'll see if that happens. Hoping to talk to some of these guys this week if things work out. Talk to some of the signees once they become official. So hopefully that'll happen. Definitely we'll have somebody on to talk about Terrence Jones. I shouldn't say definitely. I hope. I think we've got something set up to get somebody on here to talk about him. And we may at some point we may revisit a little bit of time because I covered Kentucky when Terrence Jones and Anthony Davis were there. Might have a guest on to talk about that year a little bit. Talk about those guys playing together. So we might spend a little extra time on Terrence Jones because he happens to be the last guy coming on board as we go into a time where things are going to get a little quieter without Summer League. I'm very open to suggestions about what the show should be. With the second half of July, we're still going to try to be doing a show every day. And I hope I'll have Scott Kushner on again. I hope we'll do some different things. But if you have suggestions, things you'd like me to talk about, you can say so on Twitter. I'm at @BDawsonWrites, WRITES. You can also email the podcast at LockedOnPelicans@gmail.com. That is also the place to get at me if you're interested in advertising. I'm interested in having you as an advertiser. So if you have a business or know somebody who has a business and you're a local business in New Orleans looking to advertise and reach some pretty cool sports fans, that's a great way to reach me. So I don't know exactly which days will be which topics this week on the podcast because it's going to depend a little bit on guests. But we have a bunch of stuff still to talk about. I'm going to be here talking about it. I hope you'll be here too.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.